On Tech News Today, IBM's Watson gets a job, an app that parks your car, and the ultimate motivation to run fast, zombies, coming up next.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
It's Thursday, January 9th, 2014, and this is Tech News Today. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Mike Elgin.
I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Jason Howell.
Tech News Today delivers the top tech news in 30 minutes or less. Well, today is the 7th anniversary of the iPhone announcement by the late Apple CEO, Steve Jobs. And I think this was a seminal moment in the history of consumer electronics because this was the beginning, this was the first mainstream product for the post-PC revolution, multi-touch and all that kind of stuff. And now that's everything in the market. And it was also the completion of Steve Jobs' long return to Apple and his reinvention of the company. And nowadays, Apple, you know, much of their revenue and stuff like that comes from the iPhone services, content, and that sort of thing. What does it mean to you? I know you're an iPhone fan.
I'm an iPhone fan, but I didn't get an iPhone in 2007 when it was released. And you might remember there were a lot of naysayers saying this is the stupidest thing. They're not going to sell any of them. They're priced too high.
They're expensive, yeah.
They're expensive.
I was one of them.
You want a physical keyboard. Yeah. And you know, whether or not you like the iPhone, it's been a huge success. And it's driven the market.
Yeah.
Everybody makes their version of what the iPhones created with smartphones way back when. So
that's right.
I was a little late to the game. I held out for about 2 years after the iPhones were available. I had a BlackBerry Pearl.
So did I.
I thought it was
one,
so
a little
great.
Tiny one, right?
Yeah,
it looks like a Chiclets box.
And I said, I don't need an iPhone. Yeah. Then I got one as a gift and I never looked back.
It was the App Store that got me. When they came out with the App Store, I had to have one because all these cool apps started coming out. Well, let's get to the top news. We told you Monday that Yahoo accidentally distributed malware in Europe to millions through malicious advertising posted on the Yahoo.com site. Like during a four-day period between December 31st and January 3rd, there may have been between 2 and 2.5 million actual infections. The malware redirected visitors to a site with even more malware, but today we learned that some of that malware, a lot of that malware, was taking over victims' PCs and turning them into Bitcoin miners, gobbling up resources for the victims and generating money for the malware creators.
Fingerprints are so 2013, you guys. Samsung might be adding an eye scanner to its upcoming Galaxy S5. I always have to think about that, S5 smartphone, to compete against Apple's iPhone 5S fingerprint scanner. That's at least what Samsung's mobile VP Lee Young-hee tells Bloomberg in a story that was published today. He also said to expect the Galaxy S5 by April and that the phone, quote, will be paired with a new wearable device that will be an evolution of the Galaxy Gear smartwatch.
Sexting teenagers aren't the only ones who need messages that self-destruct. A new iOS app called Confide enables encrypted, private, temporary messages designed for professionals, and it uses email instead of phone numbers. Remember, the part of the problem with Snapchat was the phone number database. You can send screenshots, and the pictures are difficult to take screenshots of, and if they are taken, the sender will be notified. The words are hidden unless users pass their hand over the screen, a kind of wand effect. And the notification for read messages is delivered to the sender. One possible snag is that this is designed for business people, and the government regulation of business requires an audit trail and the retention of business messages.
Sure, all this wearable computing sounds promising. We all want to wear all of our computers. But how willing are we all to pay up to buy into the future? Google Glass is, what, $1,500? The Sony Smartwatch 2 is $200. The Pebble Steel is $249. That's too expensive for a lot of people. Arco says it's launching a basic smartwatch this summer for just $50. That's cheaper than most watches. I mean, look at Swatch. It'll handle smartphone notifications, music playback. It'll have a 1.5-inch non-capacitive e-ink screen. And here's the wow factor, you guys. Hold on to your butts. It can tell the time, too. What?
Android and iOS dominate the market. But a Linux-based alternative called Tizen has powerful backers, including Samsung, LG, Intel, Fujitsu, Huawei, Vodafone, and Orange. A spokesman for Japan's largest carrier, NTT Docomo, told AFP that Tizen phones would hit in March. Japanese paper Mainichi Shimbun said yesterday that Samsung's Tizen phone would be announced before Mobile World Congress in Barcelona, Spain on February 24th. The details about the Tizen app stores at that event are expected, and other alternative platforms like Canonical's Ubuntu Linux for smartphones, Firefox OS, and Sailfish. Out of all of these, I think Tizen has the best shot because it's backed by the big, powerful companies.
You know what comes to mind when I think of wearable technology? Dick Tracy. No, seriously, the original smartwatch was a two-way wrist radio worn by Dick Tracy, the comic book cop, back in the 1940s. He was quite a trendsetter. And Bem Wireless is bringing him back with a watch called the Speaker Band. It's actually really just a Bluetooth microphone and speaker in a wristwatch form. It works with iOS or Android. It answers calls, lets you listen to music, has 6 hours of talk time, so says the company, even caller ID because, you know, you're a detective. It'll run you $50 in ships at the end of the month.
A Google Plus user named Stefan M. noticed that some Chromecast icons in the latest version of the Google Plus Android app. Those icons might reveal the future plans to enable the app to display Google Plus photos, hangouts, and posts on TVs using Google's Chromecast dongle. A Google representative told Tech News Today that, quote, "We don't have any plans to announce at this time."
IBM's Watson computer has had a lot of fun playing Jeopardy, but now it's time to put the artificial intelligence system to work. IBM is investing the non-trivial sum of $1 billion into a new business unit for Watson, which includes a $100 million equity fund toward new innovation at its Watson Developers Cloud, currently available to developers. IBM also says it plans to hire 2,000 employees in New York City. The computer, which used to be the size of a whole room, has slimmed down to the size of 3 pizza boxes.
Would you trust a smartphone app to park your car? A French company called Valeo demoed their prototype automated parking valet app at CES in a parking lot yesterday. It supports both iOS and Android, and you can get out of the car before the car parks itself. Valeo's main business is making car parts and electronics, and they have a Park For You system. That's park with the number 4 and the letter U. That uses ultrasonic sensors, laser scanners, and cameras that are already installed in some BMWs and Range Rovers and other cars. And the car will actually find a spot, identify a good way to park, you know, parallel parking and so on. Then it will actually park. When you're ready to leave the parking lot, the car will drive over to you by itself and pick you up. This is expected to be on the market in about 4 years.
Okay, I need you to think twice the next time you take to Facebook to complain about your crappy salary. GigaOm reports that some financial startups are now checking Facebook and Twitter feeds before thinking about giving you a loan, and that a new breed of companies like Cabbage, that's Cabbage with a K, are using social media to look for contradictions between what borrowers say to the bank and what they might say on social media. They also might look at how many friends you have, which is completely ridiculous. It's like a financial clout score. Okay. They don't all work the same way, though. The startup Flourish, which is also known as LendUp, only checks social media when provided voluntarily by an applicant. Consumer advocate groups say we're not into this trend and then claim federal laws aren't doing anything about it. That's at least according to the Wall Street Journal.
Well, now we're going to go back to CES today, where Father Robert Ballacer, who you know as the host of This Week in Enterprise Tech, Know How, and Coding 101, and also Scott Wilkinson, the host of Home Theater Geeks, and Dick DiBartolo, the GizWiz, and a Mad Magazine writer, are surviving. Let's hear it, Robert. What do you have?
I'm Father Robert Ballacer, the digital Jesuit here at CES 2014, and TNT, here's day two. Now, the Oculus Rift was all the rage last year, but it's just eyes, and eyes are only as good as the input that comes into them. That's why we're at the YEI booth taking a look at the Prio VR. This harness is a no-drift input system for pretty much any system. You could be playing it on a standard TV, a standard console, or using the Oculus Rift. Now, right now, I'm seeing my arms move in real time using these two controllers. The wonderful thing about this is because of the variety of sensors, I can have very free motion of my limbs, and it mimics almost perfectly inside the Oculus Rift itself. We're going to see technologies like this as VR continues to enhance. Not only will we see these displays increase in resolution and therefore in clarity, but we're going to see a whole series of technologies that take the real world and put it in here. Now, if you excuse me, I've got some zombies to kill.
This is a 55-inch UHD panel, but because it's glasses-free 3D, we're only seeing 720p per eye. I say only, it's hardly a little bit. It's a very nice picture. And one of the most important points about it is that it has 35 viewing zones rather than what used to be traditionally like 7 or 9. So there are many more positions for you to stand and see a 3D picture without glasses. Very cool.
These are our new high-fidelity gaming headphones. We're super proud of them because we were able to merge our audiophile headphones with a microphone to make it a headset for gaming.
These wings that you've got on the side of the headset, that takes the pressure off your head so you don't feel as if the headphones are there. You also have these wonderful cups. I mean, that's my favorite thing about the AT headphones that I use. They're comfortable to wear, but you've got open and closed back so that you can choose what kind of sound you want.
That's right, and what's really nice is that they're very lightweight. So like you said, this 3D wing support kind of makes it feel like it's just floating on your head. So if you're like a long-term gamer, you're going to be on there for a while. You're not even going to feel that with these headphones on. It's really great.
Just what I want on my bedroom wall.
We're looking at smart glasses. And Dan, tell us about this guy.
Yeah, well, this is a monocular smart glass, and it's worn different ways. We actually provide it with a headband that goes over your head.
Okay, and then so in there we see, what are we seeing in the digital display?
You can see all different types of information. So you can put it on camera mode where you're overlaying data into the space, or you can put it into playback mode where you're actually streaming video back and forth between, maybe you're a doctor and you want to talk to another doctor. You can see his picture in here. At the same time, he can see what you're doing. Maybe you're doing remote diagnostics on aircraft. So there's lots of different use models for it.
We're at the Belkin booth here in the South Hall, showing off some home automation. Now, you may be asking yourself, what does Belkin know about home automation? Well, last year at CES, they introduced us to the Wemo, which was an interesting little device. It was a Wi-Fi switch. It allowed us to turn things on and off. But what we're learning now is that that was just a Trojan horse, because Belkin wanted to get this entire family of systems into your house for home automation. This light switch also has a long press feature, which means that if I press it and hold it, it can operate a predetermined set of instructions. For example, I get home, I long press, it turns on my TV, it turns on my coffee maker, it turns on my crock pot, it turns on the heater. All these things can be built in to your home automation system. This is the thing that gets me excited. This is their new Wemo Maker. The idea is that they put home automation into the hands of the tinkerer. If you look at the bottom of this unit, it has standard inputs, things like doorbells or magnetic sensors on windows and doors. In other words, you can set the conditions for things happening in your house. A doorbell rings, it sets off your personal computer. Someone opens a window and it's going to alert you. Someone uses the refrigerator too long, someone leaves the iron on, and your system will automatically contact you because you've set parameters for when you want to be notified. At the end of day two, we've seen a lot of stuff. We've seen big TVs, we've seen fast computers, and yes, we've seen home automation. Now, if there was a trend to spot, I would say it would have to be the later, the home automation. We're seeing more and more vendors who are building in standards-based units into their devices for future applications in home automation. Everything from electronic switches to thermostats to air conditioners, appliances, and even, yes, your mobile devices. Stay tuned and stay tabbed, because I'm pretty sure that this is a trend that's going to play out.
Thank you, Robert, Scott, and Dick, for that report. So, Sarah, what's happening with digital movie sales?
Well, it's interesting. Digital sales in the U.S. jumped 47% last year to $1.19 billion, which is, according to Digital Entertainment Group, that's an industry trade group. What's interesting about this is that The fastest growing category is digital movie sales in total home entertainment revenue. Now, total home entertainment revenue is not just rentals, but also DVD sales and CD sales, which have been on a slow and very steady decline since their peak of, I think it was like 2004. What's interesting, though, is that this new window called digital HD is actually contributing to a lot of this. And this is basically like when I go to iTunes at night and I see, ooh, Blue Jasmine is available. Cool. I want to watch that movie. It's probably going to be an Oscar movie. Oh, can't rent it yet. It's only available for $20 to buy. Then you kind of have that decision to make. Do I want to buy this because I want, you know, that immediate gratification? I want to watch it right now. Or am I going to wait a few weeks and then it'll only be $4 for some sort of like 30-day rental window? Yeah. For me, it's easy to hold off. But turns out that Despicable Me 2, which is a children's movie, was available to buy online 2 weeks before its DVD release, was the best-selling title online of all of 2013. So that says to me, this is kids whining to parents and parents saying, okay, fine, I'll just pay the $20. Watch the movie.
It's like putting a toy in cereal at the grocery store. So the kid whines and the parent buys it. Yeah, it seems kind of manipulative to me. I think it may backfire because I think people feel like they're coerced into buying something they wanted to rent. And it kind of reminds me of digital music sales where they, you know, when it was, you know, CDs and stuff, they wanted to force you to buy an $18 CD when people just wanted a song or two. And they sort of kind of, it felt coercive. There's a lot of this in the movie business where they, in the order in which it goes to the theater, and then there's a big delay before it becomes available electronically, and then they roll it out in this staged thing. And I think people are getting fed up. And, you know, they basically want to watch what they want to watch. And if it's physically possible to watch it, they feel like it's being artificially withheld to create a kind of artificial scarcity.
Well, it is being artificially withheld. That's exactly what's going on. I mean, we saw Redbox sales decline in 2013 because some of the windows were just getting pushed back so that there wasn't that, again, that, oh, cool, the movie's out of the theaters. Pretty soon I'll be able to rent it on a DVD. It's driving sales. And it is pushing numbers up for the industry. But again, it's pushing numbers up and putting us in this strange situation of, do we want to play into this or do we have the patience to just pay what we should be paying?
It's probably a bad strategy to make people pay for something and then feel coerced by it. This is one of the problems with the way lots of media is monetized, which is that there are some things that are measurable and there are some things that are unmeasurable. The amount of money they make, as we've seen from your numbers, are measurable. They're easily measurable, and it could lead the content creators to think, well, this is a great thing. What's unmeasurable is how pissed off the people are, and they'll direct it sometimes at the studios or the box that they're getting it through or whatever. But if they're not happy, they're going to jump first chance they get at someone who provides an alternative to this artificial scarcity that's being created.
Maybe they're just doing people a favor by offering it only for purchase at first, because if they're kids' movies, their kids are going to watch it a million times anyways.
Yeah.
So if they rent it, they're just throwing their money away. They're going to buy it eventually.
That's right. That's a good point.
And they're also going to spend more money on storage capacity.
Yeah.
To store all of those movies that they bought, because you bought it, you're not going to throw it away now.
It's true.
It's an endless cycle.
That's right. Well, a Lenovo executive told CNET yesterday that multiple Chromebook models are coming from the company by the summer. The current models are mostly for education, but Lenovo believes that the market's going to accelerate greatly in the next 12 months. And I have a tendency to agree with this. I think people underestimate the whole Chromebook universe. Jason loves his Chromebook. Twig's Jeff Jarvis is a huge fan. And they're going to be, and apparently currently are, massive for education. There was a recent report from the NPD group that came out last month that said 1/5 of the sales in commercial laptop channels are Chromebooks. And the reason that's such a surprisingly high number is because a lot of these are going into the education market. My son works for a startup that deals with education, and they have a cross-platform product. But he tells me that Chromebooks are absolutely ideal for educational environments. Everything is the cloud. The administrative hassles and costs are close to zero or zero, and it's just fantastic for the industry. Lots of companies are going to be doing what Lenovo is doing, I think, which is going, you know, right now we have, well, in the beginning, when the Chromebook Pixel, which is the high-end sort of retina quality, they don't use the word retina because that's an Apple term, but retina quality screen came out, there were essentially two possibilities. One of them was the Retina, which was super expensive, but really nice. And then there was the really inexpensive ones, and they were kind of lousy.
Yeah, they were pretty lousy.
I didn't like the experience of using those. And I think what we're facing this year in 2014 is a world in which you have the whole spectrum of Chromebooks, from probably $150 Chromebooks that are not so great, all the way up to super high-end. Eventually, I think we'll get 4K or Ultra HD Chromebooks. And consumers will be able to take their pick. And I think it's going to be a fantastic market. I also think, by the way, that this rumored giant Apple iPad, the iPad Pro, which is also rumored to be targeted at education, I think this is a play. Apple sees the writing on the wall, and they know that schools are going to be embracing the Chromebook in a big way. And I think, in part, part of the purpose of this tablet is to compete against the Chromebook. But Jason, you pretty much are, that's your main computer, right? Or that's one of the main computers you use, is your Chromebook.
Yeah, I mean, I will admit, I didn't buy the Chromebook, the Pixel. I got it at Google I.O. as an attendee. And I had had Chrome OS devices before. I had the desktop, you know, version that they gave out the year before, and then one of the laptop versions that they gave out the year before that. And it really never stuck with me. I always had it in my head that, you know, the argument that you commonly hear about Chromebook is, oh, well, it's so underpowered, it's so limiting what you can do with it. I want my laptop. If I have a laptop, I want it to be able to do all of these things, you know, Photoshop and edit video and all this kind of stuff. And I'm a, you know, I'm the kind of person that needs to do all those things, right? I need to use Photoshop and edit video and all that. But when it comes to a laptop, what I've realized is that Chromebook is perfectly sufficient for me. And I think it's perfect for education. I think the fact that it really kind of is, you know, it's all cloud-based. So, you know, hopefully, at least at this point, you don't have to worry as much about kids kind of getting in there and messing up the device or doing something that they shouldn't be doing on it, more or less. I mean, I think it's perfect, and the low cost is very helpful. As long as the low cost doesn't mean cheap, though. And that was the problem with the older devices. Now I think they're catching on and saying, yeah, we need to offer quality devices in Chrome OS. And the more people really kind of use it, the more they'll understand why it's good to, you know, for them to use it.
Hmm. Sarah, you don't use a Chromebook. Are you a Chromebook naysayer? Or?
No, not at all. I just haven't bought a new laptop in years, actually. Yeah. But I think the Chromebook, the sort of revolution of everything being in the cloud, is really just the beginning of a long trend that'll continue. It's really, and you talk about inexpensive versus expensive versions. It's just about what kind of vessel you want to run, right? The idea that all of your information is not really physically in front of you anyway, mm-hmm, is freeing to me. I mean, that's why I like streaming music. That's why I, you know, I don't have any physical media at my home theater anymore. Everything is just coming through wires, and I like it that way. It just simplifies things. And yes, the education market is a big one for Chromebooks, but I think in general, that's just a shift that people are going to because there's less hassle.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And I think, Jason, you can agree that the biggest benefit is the psychological feeling you get knowing that it's more secure because, you know, you can't get viruses and that kind of stuff, and you know where your stuff is.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the obvious downside, though, is that it's a cloud device, yep, right? If my Chromebook didn't have, you know, it didn't include that LTE, I think it's 100 megs of LTE for 2 years through Verizon for the I.O. versions of the Pixel that came out. Just yesterday, I was at our new house, and we were kind of going over plans for it. And, of course, it's a Google Doc that I needed, and it was having a hard time connecting to LTE. So I was kind of stuck. So in that regard, it kind of sucks. But in the school, you're going to have constant connectivity. Perfect for that environment.
So, Sarah, do we have any email today?
Yeah, Max from Brooklyn in New York says he wants to point out an interesting thing that he's noticing about CES this year. Says there's a trend of trying to spread tech news out to the masses in a more integral, mainstream way. There's Yahoo with their digital magazine announcements, David Pogue and Yahoo Tech on stage, which went live yesterday. Even networks from YouTube are out there sending their normal people, he puts normal in quotes, updates throughout the day. He says this year seems to be a more refined version of CES. They've learned from their mistakes of over-cluttering and bad timing, which were prevalent last year and in years past. Max says, my point is, this year's CES is not just an introductory teaser to this year in tech. It's been a real discussion of bringing the complicated technologies that geek communities develop to the masses in a way that really adds meaning to their lives. And this year, I believe, we'll begin to learn how to do it right, from wearables all the way to home automation. Well, I think that Max is a very optimistic person. I don't know that I feel like CES feels all that different to me, then again, mm-hmm. we're not there. Yeah. We're not on the show floor. So there may be something to what he's saying. I think we're starting to see the trends of the year yeah. emerge. Cars, certainly wearables.
Yeah. Wearables.
Crazy panels. Because yeah. Scott Wilkinson was standing in front of, how big was that panel? Like 96-inch yeah. TV or something like yeah. that?
Like a whole wall.
Well, and it's a great point. The other thing that is happening is that we're, 2014 is we're having a sort of explosion in tech media outlets. All these journalists, the Walt Mossbergs and so on, are striking out on their own and creating their own companies. And they're all trying to carve out their niche. So, yes, I think there's a lot of Yahoo, David Pogge kind of media that's really targeted at the mainstream non-geek consumer. But at the same time, there are other media outlets that are going after the higher end or the business person. It's a great time to be a consumer of technology media. And, of course, all that's going to coincide with CES. Well, yesterday, on January 2nd, we reported that Snapchat got hacked on New Year's Eve. The names and the phone numbers from up to 4.6 million user accounts were downloaded. And the company's CEO, Evan Spiegel, was slammed for not apologizing. Well, he got tired of being harassed for 9 days. So finally this morning, he did apologize in a company post saying, quote, "We are sorry for any problems this issue may have caused you, and we really appreciate your patience and support," unquote. They also rolled out a fix today that lets users opt out of the app's Find Friend feature. So what do you have in other news, Sarah?
Well, in other news, I found a little note. Engineers from the University of Nebraska-Lincoln and Stanford University have produced, this is something really interesting, the world's fastest thin-film organic transistors that has the potential to replace silicon, which is pretty expensive, in high-resolution television screens, other devices. The term organic used to only mean compounds that were produced by living organisms, but now it's broadened a little bit. It's synthetic substances that are based on carbons and even plastics. So, if you think about long-term, this is kind of the next step in inexpensive, high-performance electronics that are built on transparent substrates like glass, clear, flexible plastics that are 90% transparent to the naked eye. Invisible TVs! I don't know. I'm getting a little ahead of myself, but I'm excited about, this is great innovation.
It is exciting. Well, I'm a Google Glass wearer occasionally, and I do wear it when I'm running for fitness. There's a new glassware app out there called Race Yourself. It has over 30 game modes that let you sort of be inspired to work out harder. This inspiration comes in the form of zombies and giant stones like Indiana Jones that chase you. When you look back in Google Glass, the sensors inside Google Glass know that you're looking back, and it shows you zombies chasing you down the street. There are other modes where you're in a race with a bunch of people. They're all wearing blue shirts, all the virtual people wearing these purplish blue shirts. And it's all designed for you to sort of be motivated. And let's face it, there's really, really few things in this world as motivating as a zombie chasing you.
Or apparently a boulder rolling down the hill, yes, about to squash you.
I hate that. So let's just thank heaven it's all virtual. Well, that's our show today. Please share your news, tips, leaks, and inside information and feedback in our Google Plus community. It's a thriving community with, I think we're up to, 1,100, 1,200 members so far, and we want to grow that. You can find it by searching Google Plus in the community area for Tech News Today. Please also send us an email at tnt@twit.tv or leave a message by calling 260-TNT-SHOW. Also, upvote the stories you'd like to see us cover on our subreddit at technewstoday.reddit.com and visit the Tech News Today website at twit.tv/TNT. Thank you for joining us. We'll see you tomorrow.